Welcome to Q&A with T and K. They've surfed the interwebs. They've contemplated, ruminated, and speculated. They've checked the teletype, and now they're ready to answer your questions. Here are your hosts, Tiffany and Kristen.
Hello, and welcome to Q&A.
With T and K.
Live from our new potting studios.
My studio is my bedroom.
Yeah, mine is my creepy basement.
we have really cool mics, though.
Yeah. Do we sound better? Do you feel like you're in the room with us right now? The creepy basement with me right now?
Where it's 45 degrees?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. All right. What's our question for the day, Tiffany?
All right. Our question is, what elements of early childhood education translate well to adolescence? What can teachers of adolescents take away from early childhood education? And are there strategies or processes that provide valuable structures that might be applied in other contexts? From Cassidy in Oregon.
Ooh.
I
like this question.
I know, me too. It's a good one.
It is. I think I like all of our questions, though.
I do. It's true.
So what do you think, Tiff? What do you think about? What do you think is the number one thing?
The number one,
first thing you think of when you hear that?
Play.
Me too.
Immediately. Play. Uh-huh. Play more.
Uh-huh. That's like in my notes. It's like highlighted big.
Yeah.
Big shouty letters. Play.
Yeah.
All people learn through play. Like everybody.
Everybody.
Everybody learns through play. When you are curious about something, you learn through manipulating that thing and through learning about that thing and through reading about that thing. And it's intrinsic. And when you can kind of choose what you're interested in and go for it, like that's the best learning that takes place.
Yes, I agree. And I think that in order to fully embrace that in the older grades, there has to be sort of a mental shift as to what play is.
Right.
Because I know until I really started embracing the play-based culture more, it was like, oh, learn through play. So I'll make everyone a board game that they have to play. Like, that's not what play is. Play is intrinsic. And, you have to be motivated to do it from your own needs to play. It's not just like we're going to play a game or we're going to be goofy. It's that freedom to explore without having constraints.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm so distracted because I can see you. You're Skyping for the first time.
It's exciting. I can see you too.
It's exciting. So I think, play is the number one thing. I think conversation. Conversation is huge.
Yeah.
Expand on
that. Be able
to talk. Just not like to talk about a chosen topic, but just to be able to converse with each other in a classroom setting, not necessarily just in the 5 minutes in the hall in passing, but I think having true meaningful conversations about things, mm-hmm. I don't know if that looks like, you know, doing some sort of a project together and the conversation that kind of takes place through that, or just conversation about life. Like,
yeah.
I don't know if in classrooms, if there's time in middle age classrooms and adolescent classrooms, if there's time for a conversation, but I think that people learn through talking with others.
Yeah.
And I think that's huge, is conversation.
Absolutely. And along with that, embracing the idea that as a teacher, you don't know everything,
mm-hmm.
and being able to be responsive to what your children can teach you at the same time. I think they're really embracing that child-led learning approach. And actually listening to your students and going from their interests and taking cues from them. That's really important. I also really like to own up to any time I mess up.
Mm-hmm.
That I know it might seem at first like, oh, I can't put down my shield and show them when I've made mistakes. I am perfect. I am teacher. But being able to just be like, you know what? Sorry. I missed gym time because we were having too much fun. I'll make it up to you, you know?
Right, definitely.
Being human more.
I think through conversation, too, I think talking through things with your students. So in early childhood programs, we talk, many of us, talk through things with children. And why are you feeling that way? Or why did you hit him? I don't, you know, they probably won't be hitting unless it's like a fight in the hallway in middle school. But tell me why you're mad. Tell me why you're sad. Tell me why you're feeling anxious. Tell me why you were late for class. Like asking questions and being truly genuine about it. I think that can go a really long way emotionally for children. Adolescents are at such a stage in life where everything is so emotionally high. Like their emotions just run so at like extreme high and extreme lows. And I think that that's just to kind of cue into that and recognize their feelings and kind of label those feelings. That's what we do in early childhood is I see you're feeling sad. Can you tell me why you're sad? Labeling those feelings.
And not being afraid of those feelings too.
Right.
There's that perception that, you know, they're older, so they need to keep it together and be happy all the time in class. Sometimes you have a bad day. Everybody has bad days.
Right.
You can't put in 110% every day and expect to have that be sustainable. So, you know, appreciating that in your students too.
Definitely. Back to the child-led learning. So the hard part about like traditional schooling and like child-led learning or student-led learning or individual-led learning is that there's so many standards and there's so many benchmarks that they have to meet. And I think it can be really, really hard for teachers to hone in on what interests their students. Yeah. And I think if, you know, I've been researching a lot about project-based learning schools. And I think if you have the chance to look into what project-based learning is, do it. If you're a teacher in an adolescent situation or at middle school or even high school, it is kind of amazing the type of learning that happens in project-based learning environments. Have you ever seen that happen? Like in, have you ever been to a project-based learning school?
I've seen it on a small scale, but not on a full school scale.
Right. So just a couple of examples. I went to a school last Wednesday. It was an elementary school, but there was also a high school that we went to visit the same day, and it's project-based learning school. So in the elementary level, what that looks like is they spend part of the day in like reading and writing and math. And then the rest of the day is spent in project mode. So students are picking things that are interesting to them. They're developing a project based on that, and then they are choosing the way that they are going to show what they've learned. So we met a little boy who last year was in fourth grade, and he was totally intrigued with 3D printers. So he researched 3D printers. He found out how much they cost, where to buy them, what software you have to use with them, what they can be used for, like everything. He fundraised for it.
Wow.
So he called people in his community and said, here's what I'm doing. Would your business support me? Fourth grade. This kid is in fourth grade. So he got money. He got enough money to purchase a 3D printer, bought it for the school, bought the software. Maybe it came with it. I don't know anything about 3D printers. But then he learned how to use it, and he taught all the kids in his class. And he even went to a teacher's conference in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and he taught a conference room full of teachers how to use a 3D printer. He's in fourth grade, and he was so excited about it that is what he did. And that experience was probably the most meaningful experience he will have.
Yeah. And think about all of the standards that are inherently met through that project.
Yes, exactly. And there's lots of, well, they use a system called Project Foundry, which helps them label all of the things through their project, all of the standards that they're meeting through that project. There was just an article I saw on this school's Facebook page. They mentioned a little boy who decided he wanted to change the name of Columbus Day in their town to Indigenous Peoples Day. And so he researched, you know, what we are taught about Columbus and what's true about Columbus, and decided he didn't want anything to do with Columbus having his name in the day. And so he went to the city council meeting. I think this little boy is in sixth grade. And he talked to all of the city council and the mayor and proposed a change in the name. And they thought it was really awesome that he came and he had, you know, everything. Like, he taught them everything he knew about Columbus and why he thought it should be Indigenous Peoples Day and that other communities in the area are changing it. And like, that's what project-based learning can do. That's what child-led learning can do for kids. They get very excited about learning. And that's with anybody. If you're curious about something, you are going to want to learn about it. And you are going to do everything you can to find out whatever you need to know about those things.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, child-led learning is kind of project-based learning. And so look into it. Like,
absolutely.
Real project-based learning is amazing for students. Amazing. Yeah.
How would a teacher who's never approached something like project learning, how do you think they would dip their toe in the water?
Oh, boy. I think that in like a traditional classroom, what that might look like is, okay, so you're studying, oh, boy. Let's take some social studies, for example. Throw out like something that you would study in like 7th, 8th, or 9th grade.
The history of the Louisiana Purchase.
Okay. So so what else happened around the same time as the Louisiana Purchase?
Oh man, I shot out a terrible example. Wikipedia, save me.
I'm not a history person.
Yeah, me neither. This is stretching our 1803. What else was going on in 1803? I don't know.
But
like that might be a good starting point. Like,
yeah,
you need to learn the Louisiana Purchase. What else happened in 1803?
Yeah.
Have you ever had that weird realization of like Napoleon was alive at the same time as like this crazy other thing? Like,
yeah.
Like, how do your words collide?
So, you know, like, say you had to, in the standards, it says you need to know, like, what happened between 1800 and 1850. I don't even know if that's standard, but so you're going to pick a event or something that happened in that time frame, and you're going to research it, and you are going to, the student gets to pick how they want to present it, so how they want to present what they've learned, because some kids do well on tests and would say, hey, test me. Some kids do well with presentations, so would be fine standing up and giving a presentation. Some want to create like a dramatic reenactment, so let them create a dramatic reenactment. Let them choose how they want to be assessed on it. Some might just want to write a paper and don't want anybody to even see besides the teacher what they've come up with. So I think that would be a really good way to start dipping toes in.
Yeah, dipping those toes in. And I think the important part is it's not like a choice. It's not like, oh, I'm the teacher, here are the things you get to choose from.
Right.
It comes from the student themselves.
Exactly.
How do you want to process this knowledge? How do you want to be held accountable for it?
Definitely. So, I mean, that's the kind of thing that we do in early childhood is we give them a ton of materials and just let them play, let them manipulate, let them discover on their own. And so I think as a teacher in an adolescent age group, just kind of plopping all those materials down and saying, here, let's weed through this and you pick what you find interesting. And then you're going to show us what you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love it. On a similar note, as a teacher, it can feel very like you're losing control.
Mm-hmm.
Which I know is important to a lot of teachers because
it is.
You know, there is that level of out of control that's chaos, but being able to see the out of control that student ownership versus chaos is important.
Definitely.
And along with that goes sort of documentation and how do you listen to the students and how do you know where to go next? Because once you've dipped your toe in, you're going to want to keep going.
You will. Definitely.
And I think that documentation and listening to kids is something that early childhood as a field does really well. Because kids can't always tell you what they need or what they want. So it's our job to like be the teacher researcher and figure out if they can't tell you with words like, oh, you're really upset. Oh, it's because you're hungry. Like, let's problem solve.
Right.
And so I think that that can be applied too, of like, as a teacher, your job is to figure out each kid and really think about how they learn and what excites them. And through that listening, it's always nice to have those moments of, oh, I think, you know, I've had this, I know how to do this cool thing. Can I bring it in and give it to you? Because I think you'd appreciate it and I think you're ready, you know,
right.
And just being able to listen to the kids in that way.
Definitely.
Important.
You know, I think what I would find hard being a teacher in like a middle school or high school is that you have like so many kids that you have to teach.
Oh my goodness.
They just like shuffle through there like cattle. Like they, you know, you teach the same thing seven times or six times or however many times. And you have so many different kids. Like, how do you get to know them?
Ooh.
What is it? Like, how do you?
How do you do that? That's a good question. And
I'm trying to think how I would. I think it all comes back to conversation. It's just talking. But I feel like maybe lots of teachers feel like they don't have time for that, which is really sad.
Yeah. There should be time for that. I think if you front load that and do more of that in the beginning of the year, it will make everything else easier for you.
Maybe,
Treat it as a necessary part of the learning journey.
Right. Like in early childhood, like I don't even plan anything hardly at all for the first, I don't know, 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah.
I don't really plan a ton anyway. Yeah. I mean, we plan the environment, but, and I plan the books and some of the songs that we're going to read, but everything else is just very, fly by the seat of your pants because it's child led. Mm-hmm. And, everything is pretty simplistic the first 4 to 6 weeks. So maybe that would translate well to the adolescents. Is spend time getting to know them at the beginning of the year so that you can form those relationships, so that you know them.
Yeah.
So that you know the students. Because they're going to feel, I don't know, it all comes down to love too. Like we pour so much love into our little guys, our little preschoolers that... you know, and those adolescents, they still need that too. They're still kids.
Everybody needs that.
Yeah. So like an environment that maybe feels safe and loving and like somebody cares about them.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I see at that community building as a challenge for older kids, mainly because I'm intimidated by anyone over the age of 8, I'd say. but like, how do you do that in a non-contrived way? How do you do that in an authentic child-led way or adolescent-led way? Ooh, we should coin that term.
We should.
Adolescent-led learning, because I'm sure they wouldn't be they wouldn't appreciate being called a child. I'm 16. No. Screw you.
Oh,
but like, how do you facilitate that in a way that's not like, and now we're going to play this community building game and this game? Like, it's not just about playing games.
Playing a game.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. We need like we should have like a middle school teacher on and chat with them.
I know a few. Let's do it.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Corbett Middle School teachers, if you're listening. Give me a call.
555 1212. So I don't know. I think that those are the biggest things: is love and safety and play.
Yeah.
And child or adolescent led.
Yeah.
Those are like the four biggies.
Yeah. I think those are all the biggies. If someone wanted to learn more about meaningful play experiences for older students, where would you direct them?
I have no idea. Or would you direct them?
I guess I was trying to ask, like, what are some great books?
Oh,
where do you start, books wise?
Ah, boy.
Like, what are the best playful learning resources?
Know. I think my two. I don't know. I've learned a lot from Free to Learn by Peter Gray.
Yeah, that was going to be my
I love that one. It doesn't necessarily, I don't know, talk about adolescent-led learning. I don't know. We should look into it and see what resources there are out there for adolescent teachers.
I might suggest Heather Shoemaker. Did I say your last name right? I feel like I always say it wrong.
Yeah. It's
okay, Shoemaker. her It's Okay Not to Share, which is directed towards younger kids, but she talks so beautifully and concisely about feeling powerful and how to make kids feel powerful.
Yes.
And really how to listen to kids and how to, like, let them be humans and not force them to be, like, little pupils in a line.
Definitely.
So I think that that's a really good resource, too.
BIE.org. It's the Buck Institute for Education. That's a really good website for project-based learning.
Cool.
You can check into that if you're interested in finding more out about project-based learning.
Yeah. Ooh, and also Tom Drummond and his learning stories is a great.
I've never heard of that.
Tom Drummond does these with older kids, learning stories, which are like, how do you document child-led learning in a way that other people can understand what's going on. It's really cool. It looks like a lot of work, but maybe you attempt to do a learning story for one project in your class or follow one kid at a time, or, you know, baby steps.
Baby steps.
Yeah.
That's totally what it's all about.
Yeah.
If you can't dive in deep and go like PBL, project-based learning, all the way, then even just experiencing what it is or researching a little bit more about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think with any other teaching technique or method, you have to buy in to a lot of it to actually feel why it's awesome.
Exactly.
We've talked about that before. Mm-hmm. Like, if you just do just a little bit, some little parts, you might be missing the big picture that makes it so beautiful and makes it work so well. So, like, commit to a chunk of it. Maybe it's a short chunk of time, but fully commit if you want to give it a try.
Exactly. I like that. All right. Are we ready for what would you do?
What would you do? All right. I wrote it down because I forgot earlier. I think that this will tie in well. All right, Kristen.
Okay, Tiffany.
This is your Friday. I heard a little bit about what happened to you on Friday.
Oh, my God.
For the record, everybody in the world was sick at Kristen's school.
It was awful.
And you were, like, the only teacher there?
No. There was... Excuse me, I have to cough. Sorry, you probably totally heard that. No, there was... 1/4 of the teachers there that are normally there. So one teacher was there, and then we had a sub, and then I had to fill in for the lead teacher that was sick. And I felt so bad because she sent me a text and she said, "I'm totally going to ruin your day."
No.
Because I was, the thing is my son Knox had been sick all week. And so I was out Monday through Thursday. And you're going to hear my dog barking in the background here. Oh, no. He's walking around.
Hank's being quiet today.
He's growling.
Oh, fierce.
I was sick Monday through Thursday. I wasn't sick. My son was. And so I was home for actually 3 out of those 4 days. And then on Wednesday, I went to a school tour in southern Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so on Friday morning, she called in sick. And there was 2 family Christmas programs that we had to do. So not only, and they're not like real structured programs. So what happens is in our school, the parents come at the very end of the day and we decorate cookies and then we read a story and then the kids sing songs that we've kind of been just doing all year so that where there's no like practicing and rehearsing for anything. So we just stand in front of the parents if they want to. And if the kids don't, they don't have to, they can just sing from where they're at. But so we had 2 of those that day.
Wow.
So that was my Friday.
So this is the build up to our what would you do?
Okay.
Kristen, that day, your idol, your preschool teacher idol, gives you a ring and says, "Hey, I have a long layover. Can I stop by and see your program?" What would you do?
I'd say, "Come on in." It's going to be a little crazy, but... You know, and I think anybody who isn't a preschool, if it's a preschool idol, they're going to jump right in and be like, "How can I help?" Because you seem really stressed.
They're going to see the authentic version of your school.
Exactly. Well, and the thing is like, during the day, the teachers that were there, and we had so much fun. Like, we made the best of it. We knew it was going to be a rotten, really stressful, wild day. But we totally made the best of it, and we had a really fun day together. And we ordered pizza, and I went to Caribou before Caribou Coffee. That's a coffee shop. I don't know if they have them over there in the West Coast. But no. Caribou Coffee is like the Starbucks in Minnesota.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I went and got everybody Caribou, and we had Caribou before everybody came, just to kind of like, anyway, yes,
calm before the storm.
I would say, please come in and I'm going to put you to work.
Oh, I love it. Who would it be? That's the next part of this question. Who are you picturing in your head showing up randomly?
I'm picturing Jeff Johnson because he's done it before. So, yeah, so that's who it would be. It would be Jeff. Oh, Jeff.
Jeff.
How about you? Who would yours be?
Oh, man. I feel like Bev Boss is like the OG for me. The first person that was like, oh, you're not just a preschool teacher. You are amazing.
Right.
So I think it would be her for me.
So if it was somebody I didn't know, because in my head I was picturing Jeff and that I knew him and be like, yeah, come on in, because you'd understand. If it was somebody I didn't know and had never met, I don't think I'd let him come.
Really? You'd just be like, nope.
I would be nervous.
Today's not the day.
I would be really nervous. I would be like, oh my gosh, they are going to like say, you suck. Like, your program sucks, because it was just not a normal day.
Oh, that's funny. I don't know if I would say yes or no. Because there's a certain point of, like, there are so many other things to be stressed out about.
Yeah, that's true.
That I think it would help, because I think I'd be terrified no matter what to have somebody I respect that much come and, like, put a lens on my program. I think it'd be awesome. Everyone's invited, I guess. But, you know, it's going to be stressful no matter what time of day.
Yeah, that's true. Very true. I left Friday and my daughter was with me. She's 4, and so she came to preschool with me. Or she's 5 now. Oh, she would get mad if she heard me call her 4. She's 5.
Don't tell your daughter.
She's turned 5. We went to Walmart afterwards, which is the worst place in the world to go after you've had a stressful. I do not like Walmart. I'm a Target girl. So I had to go to Walmart to get some things for a baking day on Friday morning. And
did you find anything? Because I went looking for gingerbread cookies at 8:30 at night, and they didn't have anything. Yeah,
I know.
Nobody had anything. I baked at 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah, no, it's horrible. And anyway, when I get really stressed out and have like anxiety, my vision goes cloudy. How weird is that?
Whoa.
So, anyways, I was walking through Walmart with cloudy vision. It's horrible. Anyway.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
Well, Kristen.
Well, Tiffany.
It's been fun.
Oh,
well, it has
I can
been
actually
fun.
See your face during this.
Does it make it easier to do?
I don't know. We kind of stopped halfway through. Let's try
it. Okay, let's try it again. Well, Kristen.
Well, Tiffany.
It's been fun.
It's been fun. Join us next time on Q&A with TNK.
Woo.
This has been Q&A with T and K. Thank you for listening. From serious to silly, Tiffany and Kristen are eager to answer your questions. Just email them to q4tnk@gmail.com. That's q4tandk@gmail.com. We'll be back next week with another episode. Music by Kurt Pearsall. Tiffany's sweet, sweet hubby.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.